Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
Okay. Wow.
Listen to that crowd.
They are.
Calm down.
All right, calm down, everybody. Whew. Oh my goodness, what a huge crowd we've got today. I'm very happy to introduce my guest today. I'm going to be speaking with Michelle Rowan, who is President of Customer Contact Strategies and former Vice President of Hilton Reservations. She is a subject matter expert on design and development of the work-at-home model for contact centers, support functions, and enterprise remote team members. Michelle designed and developed the work-at-home model globally for Hilton, and since then, she has helped over 500 companies with fully leveraging the remote working model, and she also does custom on-site consulting work and holds public conferences and workshops where leaders share best practices. And I know that these conferences are probably getting more and more popular since this trend I don't think is going to go away. You know, so welcome, Michelle. Thank you for joining us today.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, I'm just curious, you know, with your involvement in work from home contact centers and with your conferences, and you get to listen to all these different leaders out there, I'm sure you've picked up on what are some of the pros and cons of managing a workforce like this.
Yeah. So let me start with some of the pros, and these are consistent. I've been doing this work for about 10 years as a consultant now, so these are consistent, solid trends that mm-hmm. I'm seeing from companies that deploy the work-at-home model. It's okay. Not one-off. It's the regular.
Sure. Okay.
So first of all, in a 3% unemployment market, mm-hmm. Expanding or getting the applicant pool as wide as we can is super, super important. And the work-at-home model expands the applicant pool by 200 to 400%,
sure.
Depending on the market that companies are operating in, because we're just able to cast a wider net and generate interest from all kinds of people that perhaps would not consider a contact center position in a bricks and mortar office with us, but they're happy to consider an account manager or customer care or sales position mm-hmm. Or, you know, account rep position in a home-based environment where they can eliminate a commute and, you know, be in their own work environment and perhaps get a little bit more flexible with their schedule and things like that. So, certainly that has always been important, has always been a return, and now more than ever is seriously mm-hmm. important because of the 3% unemployment market. Working at home is considered a benefit. Many employees view it that way, so they're seeking that mm-hmm. As, you know, a mode of working, whether it's part of their schedule of the work week at home or their entire schedule at home. It's definitely sought after and viewed as a benefit by employees. And that's why we see so many more employers way beyond the contact center environment.
Right.
Offer remote working now, either part-time or full-time or, you know, at various times of the year. So that's a huge benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are seeing improvements in attendance. Employees that work from home have a tendency to be more focused, more dedicated. It's easier to, quote, commute to work when you're not feeling
sure.
so well.
Yep.
Because all you have to do is step into the next room. So attendance generally increases by about 25%. So in a contact center environment, unexcused absenteeism on a general rule runs something like 8%, and in the work-at-home environment, it's more like 5 to 6. So that's a significant improvement
wow.
on
yeah.
staffing and a lot we can do with that labor. Labor cost is another area because of flexible scheduling and the ability to offer part-time shifts and staggered start and end times and split shifts. enables organizations to be much more efficient with their staffing models during the course of the day. And in most contact center environments, there is varying arrival pattern of voice and non-voice work during the course of the day. In other words, there's peaks and valleys.
Oh, yeah.
And in an office environment, we have to staff kind of across the board and accept the valleys in order to be properly staffed during the peaks. And in the work-at-home model, we don't have to do that. There are plenty of people that want to work for 2 or 3 hours in the morning and then take midday off to spend time with their kids and then work for a couple of hours again in the afternoon or the evening. So companies experience serious efficiencies in staffing to the tune of 15 or 20% of labor cost.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's significant. Many companies, there is a cost benefit overall because there's, you know, I mean, less seats in an office means lower operating costs and lower real estate costs.
Yep.
That used to be 10 years ago when this model was kind of just getting off the ground. A driver for the work-at-home model, and I have to say I don't see companies deploying the work-at-home model just to shed real estate costs
right.
anymore.
Right.
It's considered one of the offshoots, and it's a complement to the work-at-home model, but it's not necessarily a driver. The driver is usually around staffing, again, expanded labor pools, finding the right talent, you know, matching the education, knowledge, skills, and abilities, labor costs that we're looking for, even language skills in specific markets,
mm-hmm.
You know, against the pools that are available. So those are really kind of the big ones on the pro
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and they're consistent. On the con side, there is some incremental startup cost mm-hmm. to the work-at-home model. For example, in the technology space, it costs a little more per license typically for an ACD license from a carrier like an Avaya or a Cisco,
mm-hmm.
because it's an exclusive use. Of a seat or a port as opposed to one that's shared during the course of the day in an office environment. So there could be some incremental costs there. If we're provisioning equipment where only one person is going to use it during the course of the day as opposed to hotel kind of seating in an office mm-hmm. environment, again, there's a bit of a larger investment. Oftentimes we're doing two monitors at home, you know, mirroring kind of the setup that we have in an office. It's just the utilization may be exclusive to one person.
Right.
Oftentimes, we're issuing a laptop or a PC, sometimes the same client, that type of thing. So I would say that startup cost and also including cost for tech support in early days of employment, mm-hmm. Until people are comfortable utilizing the work-at-home model, sometimes, you know, we need to provide more support and attention. People are generally using ISPs, which is probably the weakest part of the work-at-home model in an office environment. You know, we're using a LAN or a WAN. It's a solid connection. And
at home,
we have to rely on an ISP. So some tech support, incremental tech support, is usually required for the first 60 to 90 days until people are up and running and stable and comfortable with their whole kitted out
Yeah, that makes
gear.
Sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the work-at-home model. The other thing I want to call out as being different, I would not call it a con, but it's certainly different, is how we engage, how we share knowledge and experience, how employees share knowledge and experience with each other, how the company engages with employees, how employees engage with coworkers.
Uh-huh.
There is a plethora of terrific technology that's out there today to make that really, really easy for a distributed workforce and nearly as good as people sitting beside each other in an office, in some cases actually better because networks are broader beyond people that you can just see or physically lean into.
Right.
But we, you know, as organizations, we have to commit to figuring out those communication platforms for our employees, and then setting expectations that they're going to be utilized so that people get practiced and comfortable mm-hmm. with sharing knowledge and experiences and engaging that way. So that it's not a con. It's new and it's different.
Right.
And there right. needs to be a commitment on behalf of the company that they're going to make it one click easy for people, just as mm-hmm. easy for people to connect in the remote environment as they do in office. And those, you know, include things like great meeting platforms, whether it's Adobe Connect or WebEx. It means use of video so that face-to-face interactions are a regular part of sure. What we do. Uh-huh. You know, businesses are social organizations, so face-to-face interaction plays a huge part of that. And then use of, you know, a platform like Slack or Yammer mm-hmm. or Skype for Business yeah, where chat rooms are open and utilized as the primary source of exchange during the course of the day. So, again, a bit of a shift, and we're seeing a lot of that take place even in the office environments today.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. Certainly a shift and a focus where companies have to commit to deploying those channels and sort out processes on who's going where for what sort of exchanges.
I see that one of my clients, you know, they use Team, Microsoft's Team, you know, and they were using Skype, and I said, well, why are you moving from Skype to Team, because so many people are using Skype for Business, because like you say, it's funny when you said one click, that reminds me of the old days of building e-learning courses.
I said,
how many clicks away does it take to get to the content, you know?
Very, very good analogy, Nancy. That's a great analogy.
Yep, and it's so true. I mean, you've got to make it simple to get to, very intuitive, and you probably have a mix of age groups that are doing the work from home as well, so you've got to, you know, take that into consideration too.
Exactly. On channels that you're going to invite people to use, having more than one option is a good idea. Training, because mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. people learn differently depending on their demographics, right?
Yep.
And they're you know, just comfortable in different channels. So, all those things come into play.
So with all that, you know, once you've kind of made that transition, you know, what are the other specific tools that people use to monitor? I know there's tools where you can actually watch, you know, mouse activity or take screen grabs every 5 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever. But what have you seen that people use the most to kind of monitor that agent performance?
Mostly I see the use of tools called like CenterView, which is mm-hmm. ACD. Viewing, and that doesn't change regardless of where people sit. So whether people are sitting in an office, mm-hmm. you know, on the contact center floor, or they're sitting at home, they're viewed as a port. And from that port, we are seeing whether people are on an active call, whether they're in hold mm-hmm. status, whether they're away from the phone completely, whether they've logged out for training, whether they're sitting on a 20-minute call. What sort of, you know, all those things can be viewed from the ACD singularly, and we've been doing it for a decade in-house.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no change when it comes to observing employee status when they move home, which is why I think the work-at-home model for contact centers has gotten such huge traction. I mean, 80% mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. organizations in the U.S. today use the work-at-home model in some capacity, at some percentage of their staffing model, and it's because we don't lose visibility of employee output and productivity. In other jobs that are less transactional, like a job like yours or mine or, you know, more of a, you know, a central management sort of or consultative or analytic sort of role, we don't have as much visibility of output, and I think that's why so many leaders like to have people kind of corralled in an office environment, because they want to keep their, quote, eye on them.
Right.
Even though they're really not monitoring output at all during the course of the day, not very effectively. But in the contact center environment, we don't lose any visibility whatsoever. So if I see somebody that's logged off for 20 minutes, Mm-hmm. Or on a phone call that's 25 minutes long when a typical transaction takes 3 minutes. In an office environment, I would probably call them, or I would notify their supervisor, or I would co-browse in.
Yeah.
And shoot them a text message or an instant message and say, what's up with you? Or, you know, worse comes to worse, you physically walk over and touch somebody on the shoulder. But frankly, those days are long gone and that never happens anymore. So what would I do in a home environment? I would do the same thing. I would co-browse. I would instant message. I'd send them a chat. I'd notify their supervisor. I'd say, what's up? Is there something we can help you with? Are you stuck? You know, back to work, or you're on a break, where are you, we need you, you know, those sorts of things. So that's the primary tool by far.
Yeah.
In addition to that, companies can monitor, like you said, Nancy, they can monitor where people are navigating during the course of the day. They can monitor their desktop by using NestorSoft and other tools that just give companies complete monitoring where somebody's going during the day, where they're spending time, and what applications. We can even see how many applications they have open, you know, how much of a draw that is on their ISP that could be slowing them down, all those sorts of things. So I certainly see those as the dominant methods. You know, there's other surveillance. You know, companies also usually record 100% or most of phone calls, so we can always go back and listen to those transactions or read those transactions. That's another common practice that's been around for a long time. So those are the primary surveillance kind of tools that I see in the work at home model. Some companies can go so far as to turn a camera on someone all day long. You'd have to get permission to do that, as long as you're transparent around the need.
Seems pretty extreme, but
it is extreme, and that's, you know, maybe in some environments where security is top shelf, like financial services and healthcare and stuff like that, there may be some of those incremental adds when it comes to, you know, locks on doors, perhaps a camera mounted somewhere in the office or a camera turned on to the employee.
Interesting.
Rare, but it's there.
I could see it occasionally. So, you know, I've talked to people about, you know, employee engagement, employee experience versus customer service. So it's, you know, the X and everything. I said to somebody one time, next time I start a company, I need to have it in an X, FedEx, CX. It's like there's an X in everything these days.
That's so true.
Kleenex. So from from an employee engagement side of these things, you know, there's, because I've managed a workforce that's been remote, you know, some of the things we would do would be everybody's going to have a pizza lunch, and we actually would have pizza delivered to their house, you know, things like that that keep the morale up and camaraderie up. So, you know, what are some of the techniques that you've seen other companies to keep employees engaged?
Yeah, and I recommend that companies start with the same list. So you've got a list of, we all have a list of stuff that we're doing in-house to drive engagement and interaction and connection to the company. So I recommend that the companies start with the same list for the work at home model and then just do the same things.
Okay.
And where we need to make changes, make them. So here's an example. One method of engagement may be town hall meetings. Typically they, you know, sometimes they're in person in an office environment, but oftentimes now they are audio cast, right?
Yes,
or video.
Yes.
They are digital. So does that have to change at home? The answer is no. Employees would access that the same way. They would be connected in live or recorded, however a town hall meeting is being held. Another example I'll use is what you just mentioned, Nancy. So if, you know, tchotchkes, like giving people food for celebration of a birthday or a performance milestone, something that's important to the company, or an anniversary or a leadership award or something like that. So if we're giving people pizza or T-shirts in-house, my recommendation is that you do the same at home.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that may be a cost that shifts a little bit. So if your shipping costs have to go up, in order to provide people with the same sort of collateral material that you deem so important to your business and to your culture, reflective of your culture, then my recommendation is don't change that at home because people will feel like they're getting less.
Right.
Just shift your budget. That's why we do new budgets every year. That's why it's an annual process. Mm-hmm. Increase your shipping costs so that pizza deliveries once a quarter can be made, so that people can get T-shirts or coffee mugs or whatever those things are that you deem so important to your culture. Some companies invest heavily in those things. Some companies don't. It's truly, and there's no right or wrong way. It's purely a reflection of your company values and your company culture. But my message is that whatever you value and do in-house, do it at home. If you have to spend a little more, that's okay, because ultimately the business model reduces costs by about 20% overall, even net-net after those increase in costs that I talked about earlier and technology and stuff like that. So there's still a savings to be had. It's just the bottom line is that not everything costs less. Some things cost more, and this is one of them.
Right.
You know, perhaps in the area of recognition and reward.
Right. Do you ever see mixed teams, like some virtual people are on a team with in-office people?
Yeah. And depending on how a company works, if a company has gotten really good at running digitally, in other words, if most of knowledge sharing and experience sharing is happening on digital platforms, regardless of where people sit, it doesn't matter. If most knowledge sharing and experience sharing is taking place face-to-face and offline, it makes a big difference because people at home will be missing.
Right.
It is often, and again, it depends on how mature companies are with digital communication and performance management. If a supervisor has to manage both ways, offline and online, it's certainly taxing for them.
So if
a company is not very far along in digital performance management, I would recommend dedicated teams. If a company has gotten really good at digital performance management, then it really shouldn't make a difference where people sit.
I've seen both scenarios, and whoever's managing that team really has to have a handle on the technology if they're trying to incorporate some kind of live conference room and people virtually. It always blows up.
It's different skills and technology, you know, never seems to work 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm,
you know, get to 90, it's great, but you've got to have a plan and a contingency plan and you know, be really comfortable running on a virtual platform and having kind of a number two person, a wingman with you, or a producer, as I call them, that can share in the navigation and observe what's going on with people's participation and their contributions and this sort of things.
Sure. Have you seen where if they've surveyed the staff, employees, are the work-from-home people, do they score higher responses as far as they're satisfied with their job than the in-office people?
Yes. And that's another kind of pro. I should have mentioned that before. But, you know, kind of gets back to the retention thing. Turnover and retention improves by about 25%, and we see the same improvement in employee satisfaction, a minimum of 25%. It can go as high as 60%. Because people, when we hire people that want to work from home, they ultimately find more job satisfaction. If we ask people to move home that don't really want to work that way, or we hire people that have never done it before and they're unsure and they end up not enjoying it, well, then they can be less productive and less service-oriented than their counterparts. But when we get it right in terms of hiring people that want to work that way, because they're happier, the customer experience also changes.
Yeah.
So it's a double win. It's employee satisfaction scores and retention scores improve. And then we also see customer experience scores increase as well.
That's great. Yeah, it's a great segue. It's going to be my next question. Does the customer get a better experience?
Yeah, and again, it's, with the numbers that I see, it's 95%. of customers get same or better experience, and it's usually somewhere in the 15 to 20% get a, say they get, you know, companies reports say that their customer experience scores are higher. So 95% say same or better.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, you know, because I'm sure people that try to push back on this, you know, like, well, you know, something's going to happen to the customer, or we won't be able to track that. And I'm just like, why not? I mean, you're tracking this, it's the same technology infrastructure that you have for an office, so it shouldn't be the same. And like you said, if the employee is already more engaged, they didn't have to put up with this a stressful commute that day, or you know, drop their kids off at daycare or whatever, they're running around, and then they get to work and they're already, you know, flustered and whatnot. So, yeah, I can certainly see where that would pan out to be a much better
experience. Or they sat in traffic and the dryer broke and their clothes were wet, and the people at home have already done an extra load of laundry and watered the lawn and brushed the cat and took the dog for an extra walk and, you know.
Got their coffee, they're relaxed, you know, they're like, how can I help you? So when you were at Hilton, were you the first one to say, to propose this, or how did that come up at Hilton?
Actually, I was in Europe looking after our international offices, and Hilton in the U.S. had just gone through a proof of concept for the technology, to use the work-at-home technology, and it worked. So they started expanding the work-at-home model in the U.S. slowly. And I was in Europe, and we had our own staffing challenges with languages. So we took what the U.S. was doing and made it work in Europe by, you know, socializing it to reflect the government environment, the regulatory environment, and also the cultural environment. And, and it solved our staffing problems. We were, you know, we were struggling with language hires. So it solved our staffing problems. And then I came back to the U.S. after 5 years, and we decided to seriously expand the work-at-home model, and I led that strategic kind of, you know, expansion into markets. So in a period of 18 months, we transitioned more than 1,000 jobs from in-house to at-home. It was fast and furious. And we reviewed all of our business processes, 100% of them, and overhauled, I don't know, probably 60 or 70% of them along the way, and added some new technology. But it was super successful for Hilton and still is today. So, yeah, like many other, Hilton was an early adopter, and there are, you know, like I said, 80% of U.S. companies use the work-at-home model in some capacity today.
So tell us, tell our listeners out there, I mean, you run several conferences each year around work from home. So.
I do.
So maybe you can tell us a little bit about what that experience is like.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me that mention. So we do two different types of conferences. One is a two-day deep dive, best practice sharing, kind of benchmarking conference. It's a workshop. We have one actually coming up in Denver on August 7th and 8th, and then we have one in October and another one in November in Laguna Beach, California. So they are deep dive exchanges and discussions around the work-at-home model for contact centers and support functions. The attendees are leaders from companies who use the work-at-home model today or are seriously considering it and they're about to pull the trigger. The objective of conferences is to understand what others are doing in the work-at-home space because it changes so quickly as a result of technologies and a result of company objectives. So staying connected and understanding what others are doing as we continuously improve our own or deploy for the first time is super valuable. And then we have a large conference of about 150 people in Dallas in March 2020, and that one will have about 20 speakers. The other ones are smaller and more intimate that I was telling you about, and that one is a big one and has, again, 20 speakers, many sharing their case studies and their journeys and their insights and learnings around the work-at-home model, and then we do a bunch of breakout sessions. On HR and learning and equipment and services provisioning and security and communications and engagement and stuff like that. So Wow. Those are terrific networking sessions, and again, a way to get kind of windshield tours of what a lot of companies do with work.
It sounds like if anyone's considering it, they should definitely attend one of these conferences, especially the I think the more intimate ones are. I get more out of those because you get to actually get to know more people at a deeper level than these large like CCW and things like that are just.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nancy. The difference is that the big conference, people are talking at you, and that's okay because you're getting windshield tours. That's exactly what they are. They're downloads where people are telling their stories. And in the full two-day conferences that are smaller, like Denver will be about 60 people, Laguna Beach will be about 40 in each one of them, you're having much more detailed discussions and more together as one group for the full 2 days. I mean, I literally have to, blow whistles to get people to turn and to me for a few minutes and let me guide them so we get through the agenda because the discussions are so hearty. So, people get a lot of – you're right.
Fantastic. Well, so for my last question, how do people find out about these then?
The website is customercontactstrategies.com.
Okay.
So just go there and then click on conferences, and there is a page committed fully to the upcoming events.
Perfect. Perfect. I agree. I need you to go out there and check it out. If you're at all thinking about doing a work from home transition, or if you're in the middle of one, or you've already done one, regardless. I think it would be helpful for you. And I think our studio audience thinks it's amazing. they're pumped about this now. I can't believe it. This is great. Well, Michelle, thank you very much for being on this show, and we'll have to have you back on again some other time.
Great. Thanks so much, Nancy.